So, of course, I'm joined here today by Stanley Nelson, the director of the new Miles Davis biopic, Birth of the Cool. And I'm also joined by Aaron Davis and Vince Wilburn. Thank you for being here today.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Yeah,
so I want to start with you, Stanley, as the director of the film. What was your vision for this particular documentary?
We wanted to try to make a biography. We wanted to include as much music as we could. We wanted to include as many people who knew Miles and played with Miles as we possibly could. We wanted it to be firsthand accounts. And early on, we came upon the idea of using Miles to kind of narrate his own life. So we took Miles' autobiography, and we took other interviews that Miles had done. And we have an actor, Carl Lumley, who kind of voices Miles' words. But all the words that you hear in the film are Miles' own words.
Music has always been like a curse with me. I've always felt driven to play it. It's the first thing in my life, go to bed thinking about it and wake up thinking about it. It's always there. It comes before everything.
Aaron and Vince, as kind of the keepers, the family members of Miles and kind of the keepers of his legacy, what was it like working with Stanley?
You know, we met with Stanley at probably around 08 or something like that, 2008. And I checked out some of his films. And I remember him sitting there. I remember him sitting in the room where we were having a meeting. And I just thought, oh, what a good energy, you know. We had some other pitches in the past where the energy was very awkward in the room, where somebody would be like, well, my first scene's going to be Miles is going to crash his car into the side of a building and 5 kilos are going to fall out the car. And, oh, that's a true story, though. I heard it's a true story, though. I'm going to put it in the mail. So we were like, yeah, okay, we'll get back to you on that. But, you know, with Stanley, you could tell he just wanted to make a film, warts and all, about Miles and his life.
From meeting Stanley for the first time back then, It's a sense of calmness with me, because I knew we were in good hands. Because he's a no-nonsense man, you know, Black African-American. I just felt at ease, you know. It was no frills, no this is the way it's going to be, you know. And he took a lot of my segment with me crying out of it. I love that. You know,
I never said this before to my brothers here, but, you know, I was nervous. You know, I mean, I wanted to do this film. This was like a dream project for me. And then so I really wanted to make this film. But I didn't want to say too much because, you know, I didn't know. I couldn't tell you what the film was going to be. I could tell you it wasn't going to be Miles driving into a wall and coke falling out of his car. I could tell you that wasn't what it was going to be, but I didn't know exactly what it was going to be, but I knew that I wanted to do it, so I was a little bit nervous.
So you did do a little deep diving into this film, especially in his early life when he was in Paris for the first time following the war, coming back and having to deal with the racism here in this country, which kind of pushed him over the edge. Can you talk a little bit about how you wanted to approach those different times in his life that maybe other films have not touched on as deeply as you have?
Well, one, we had Miles's autobiography and other interviews, so you know, we had Miles's own words to use, and that really helped. Two, in the Paris segment, which was really monumental in Miles's life, he goes to Paris in 1949. He had never been out of the country before, and he it's the first time he goes out of the country. And like so many African American artists, he falls in love with Paris and the way he's treated as Paris in Paris as an equal. And he also falls in love with Juliette Gréco, who we were able to get an interview with, who's incredible, you know, today. You know, you can see the love in her eyes still for Miles. So we were able to do that. And you know, I think that what happens for Miles is, you know, he's in Paris, he's hanging out with Juliette Gréco, he's hanging out with Pablo Picasso and other artists, and they're looking at him as an equal. And like so many African-American artists, he comes back to the United States and feels like he's been slapped in the face. you know, all of a sudden, you know, he's back to the racism of the United States, and he kind of spirals into drug use, which he had avoided until then. And, you know, and that's the time of Charlie Parker when a lot of jazz musicians are getting caught up in drugs. And Miles had avoided it until then, but he really does go into a downward spiral with drugs for a few years.
It was hard for me to come back to the bullshit white people put a black person through in this country. I lost my sense of discipline, lost my sense of control over my life, and started to drift. Before I knew it, I had a heroin habit, which meant getting and shooting heroin all the time, all day and all night. That's all I live for.
Vince and Aaron, was there anything that you learned about Miles that you didn't know before during this process, especially with the deep diving that goes on, or the cradle to the grave story that's being told here?
I mean, I seem to pick up things every time I watch the film. I've seen it about, I don't know, 6 or 7 times now. But most of the stuff I read in his book, I was on a trip to Costa Rica like 20 years ago. I read the whole thing, and so most of it I've seen it before. But you know, it's always good to hear other people talk and have the, like Stanley said, firsthand accounts that you haven't necessarily seen before. Like, I mean, my mom is in the movie, you know, and you know, his old manager, like Mark Rothbaum. You know, I've talked to Mark, but I don't think a lot of people knew the stuff that Mark knew, or you know, just stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, Aaron and Vince, who are sitting here with us, are great in the film. You know, they talk about, you know, the period where Miles spirals downward, you know, and they see him at that point. And Miles has shut himself off from a lot of the musicians. But because they're family members, they actually see him. And it's really interesting because they see him and they're really young. And so it's like how a young person sees someone who is their father, their uncle that they idolize, who's now going into a downward spiral. So I find that part of the film to be really new and really fascinating.
Vince, would you like to chime in there?
The honesty of the relationships and the women that were in the movie, Aaron's mom, Auntie Frances, I call her Auntie Frances. I mean, there are things I want to ask Aaron's mom all the time, but it seemed that it was depicted in the movie, you know, because I'm still sort of shy, believe it or not. So Stanley brought out the inner, you know, like the he made the relationships come out on film, you know, and the honesty, and that was never touched on before, you know, that I witnessed. And his relationship with his friend Corky, one of his best friends. I don't want to give the documentary away, but that really got me. And it gets me every time I see it.
On my way to rehearsal one day, Miles is coming down the street. And we looked at each other, and he looked at me, and he said, "Now that I've found you, I'll never let you go." And what happened was, I moved in with him.
We found people in East St. Louis who knew Miles as a kid. Leanne Bonner went to grade school with Miles and knew Miles in grade school. And she's, yeah, as Vince said, she's 94, and she talks about him, you know, as being this kind of little rich boy. You know, that's how they looked at him, you know, in East St. Louis.
And the closeness, because when Stanley touched on the drug, when Uncle Miles had the heroin problem back in the 50s, she didn't want to talk about it. She didn't want to, you know what I mean? But you could feel why, you know, because they were so close.
When people go to see this film, what do you want them to take away from it?
You know, one of the things we wanted to do in this film was to let you hear Miles' music, because there's so many music documentaries that you see, and like you don't really hear the music. You know, people talk about the music, but you don't hear it. And so we wanted to be able to kind of, at some points in this film, stop and let you hear the music. Like we do a beautiful thing, I think, with Miles playing ballads, and it never entered my mind. And we play damn near the whole song, you know? We play almost the whole song. But I think that's one of my favorite sequences that I put together in any film I've ever made, because I think you understand even more deeply what the song is and what it means and what it means to be able to play a sensitive ballad. And we let it play, you know, we let it play. You know?
Well, with such an extensive catalog of music, what was that process like, picking the music to kind of coincide with what stories are being told in the moment?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we knew early on was that we wanted to try to cover as many or all the eras in Miles's music as we possibly could. Now, you know, if you're a Miles lover, you're going to see the film and say, well, what about this? How come you didn't have that song in it? But, you know, but we do have something from that era of Miles's music. We wanted to make sure we talked about, you know, the Bitches Brew on the Corner era that people sometimes, you know, feel like, oh, that wasn't anything. You know, the last thing Miles ever did that was great was Kind of Blue. No, we think that those are really important recordings. And I think there's really great stuff that we have there, you know, with Lenny White, who was on the record, Mike Stern, who was on some of the later recordings, M2MA, Marcus Miller, who were on those recordings. And you know, and it's really kind of a real interesting part of the film. You know, we have Stanley Crouch in there who jumps in and says, you know, that he didn't like it. And Carlos Santana, I don't want to blow it, but Carlos kind of refutes that in a hilarious way. But, you know, so we wanted to try to cover as much of his music as we could, but not have it be like just, you know, 2 seconds of this and 2 seconds of that, but be able to lay in it and say, this is what was important about Bitches Brew. This is what was important about On the Corner. You know, obviously, this is what's important about Kind of Blue and Someday My Prince Will Come in the other recordings early on.
Aaron and Vince, let me get to you guys on this. Aaron, your father, and Vince, your uncle, being Miles Davis, what are your thoughts on how the music is used in this documentary to reflect on the different times of his life?
Well, I mean, I don't want to give away too much of the documentary. I want people to see it, but the music is used, I think, in the best possible way. Like Stanley said, there's that scene that he's talking about with it never entered my mind. You know, there's this great use of his music. I mean, it's really hard to talk about it without giving it away, but I mean, some of the other musicians that are interviewed also speak about his music, and it's playing, and it's, you know, it's playing at the same time, and, you know, it's just done tastefully, so tastefully.
Vince?
If I was a movie director, and the way Stanley put the music with this movie, that's how I would do it. It's like Stanley's a musician, you know. And seriously, I mean, it just worked. You know, either a director's going to put the music with his movie that he works on, it'll enhance the movie, or it could be detrimental to the movie. But Stanley had it to the beginning, from the beginning of the documentary to the end. He had it down to, in each segment, each part of moving through Uncle Miles' life, Stanley was right there with the correct music. I would like to know how you did that, how you saw the scene, how you knew to put what to what.
I think one of the things that we discovered in making the film was that there was a clear progression to Miles' music. Hmm. That what seemed like jumps to us from the outside were not jumps. So, you know, to give an example, one of the scenes that I love is, you know, he goes to France later on, and I think it's 56, and does Elevated to the Gallows, which is he's recording directly to the screen for a movie score, you know, and he just comes in with a couple little sketches and records right to the screen. And as Vincent Bessier says, who we recorded in France, a historian in France, says, you know, Miles learned something there. And it's no coincidence that he comes back from that and goes in and does Kind of Blue, which is kind of the same way. He goes into the studio with just some sketches. He had learned something, you know, doing Elevator to the Gallows. And so there's this progression in Miles's music. It's not, they're not really clear jumps, although they look like it from the outside. It looks like, okay, Bitches Brew comes out of nowhere. But no, it doesn't. You know, it comes from what Miles had done before and what he's hearing in music and popular culture before that. And we tried to follow that line as much as we could.
We screened the movie in Soweto and Johannesburg and Cape Town. And the response from the South African musicians and the audiences was phenomenal. You know, they stayed for the Q&As, and the questions were incredible. And I commend Stanley because, you know, Uncle Miles was global, you know, and this documentary, we hope to touch the world.
Thank you all for coming in and joining us here at WBGO. Our jazz listeners, our enthusiasts, our Miles enthusiasts and fans, I'm sure, are eagerly awaiting this weekend's premiere. So thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.